Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And welcome back. And we've had some news since our last episode regarding some changes in the new 9th edition rules. And I can actually say this has probably shaken most players to the core. Ah, funny pun. So, there we go. So a couple changes have come through, and I have to say, before we get into these rules, it's one of those, reminds me a lot of the terrain rules from LVO last year. Are they good rules from a big macro standpoint? Absolutely. And is this something I support? Absolutely. The question is, why'd you come out with it now? I mean, this seems like it was a rule that should have come out in the core rule book, no pun intended, rather than a codex by codex thing. I mean, if you can give me a PDF with all the blast rules, can't understand why you couldn't have fixed this at time of release as opposed to the way they're doing it now. But I think I jumped a little bit ahead. Ray, you want to read us the big rule change?
You talk about the core rule change?
The core rule change.
All right, so there's a new keyword. Not every unit's going to have it. Just certain ones. The core keyword. Go figure. So we're going to start seeing it in the new Space Marine Codex and Necron Codex. It's not just for troops. It's one of the things that make it pretty obvious. So things like Terminators and Lich Guard will have it, along with Bike Squads and Tombblade, and even some vehicles. So basically what's going to start happening is aura abilities are only... Mini aura abilities, such as the one from Captain Tenant, are only going to affect the core units. And the example that they give is an assault intercessor and a repulsor executioner within range of the Space Marine Captain aura. And without words, because it's all in symbols, there's a big red X next to the repulsor executioner saying that it won't get boost from the aura, but assault intercessor has a green check mark. And basically, that's why you can't have a Space Marine Captain standing a bunch of vehicles basically babysitting them. So we've got the Rites of Battle Aura ability, which is listed here. It's shared by all varieties of Space Marine Captains. While a friendly chapter core unit is within 6 inches of this model, each time a model in that unit makes an attack, reroll a hit, roll of one. And it says a crucial side effect of this is that characters themselves won't be affected by the... They utilize the core... So basically, in the example that they had there, the Space Marine Captain does not get to reroll hits of one, and instead focus entirely on his 2+ ballistic skill without those said. And it also mentions that captains will not be affected by the lieutenants they call the tactical position,
which I believe is the reroll wounds.
Yeah.
So they have given a nice couple of fluff reasons why that should be. And from a macro standpoint, this makes a lot of sense. Why is the lower ranking person inspiring the higher ranking person to do better? From a purely game design thing, it gets rid of a lot of these overlapping buffs that made certain builds redundantly overpowered. So that part is like, okay, we can live with that. And at first glance, it's kind of like, not too bad. Again, I go back to, why couldn't you give us a list of core units like you did a whole list of blast weapons? But I'm okay, whatever. I'm also confused by the second diagram they've got. They show, like, I think it's a Phobos captain. I think so.
Yeah.
And
it's a Phobos lieutenant.
Looks like Phobos lieutenant. He can apparently the intercessor to the right does benefit, but the shield guard veteran does not.
That's the Indominus captain.
Okay. Indominus. All right, so that makes a little more sense. So that's what I say. On the big macro level, it's like, okay, so they don't get rerolls. We're kind of, so after all these buffs we've been hearing about from weapons and lethality, we're going to scale back how well characters work. And at first I was like, this isn't such a big deal, because in the game you need to be in so many different places on the board, even though it is a smaller board. It's so important to have board presence and board control and being able to tag on to different objectives. It was always hard to be in some sort of aura at this point. That being said, the whole that the actual individual does not benefit from his own aura, okay, sure, I get it. But then when you start going through each of your older codices and start going about, well, what about this guy? What about that guy? there's a lot of examples. All of a sudden you start going, it creates more questions than answers. And again, that's where I go, we have to wait till our codex comes out to find out what's the answer rather than, hey, here's a list. This was very confusing at this point. So there are definitely some very competitive lists, some net lists that we talk about on a weekly basis when we talk about our tournament coverage that could or could not be greatly affected. So the first one I can think of is the standard AdMech list of you take Mars, you take Belisarius Call, and you took three Onager Dune Crawlers and a Spearhead and parked them all in the back corner. And Call buffed the Onager Dune Crawlers to no end. Our Onager Dune Crawlers, my guess, are very similar to Repulsors. Would they retain the core ability? Probably not. So is that list dead? What is going to be cored in that particular faction? Not as quite as clear cut as it is with Space Marines. So that's where it's like, okay. Another example, I was talking to Ray about it pre-show, and I'll pull it up here. I know you're like, oh gosh, not another Chakari example, but there's plenty of other faction specifics, and you'll see these as well. Because the example they gave with the assault Space Marines there was all chapter or all, you know, friendly models within range. Now they're sending all friendly core models. Okay, that makes sense. What about if the player has something a little more specific? So in this particular case, I'm looking at Drazar, who's pretty much an auto take right now for most Chakari lists. Master of Blades, add 1 to wound rolls for friendly incubi units whilst they're within 6 inches. Okay, not to worry about the core rule at all, because it specifically says it's only incubi. It's very specific. So I don't expect that changing. But does that mean Drazar still benefits from his own aura ability? Because the other core ones don't. So it's a little bit of a mystery at that point.
Yeah, so in my opinion there is, it's going to be one of two things. It's either going to be, yes, he will. Or what's going to happen is it's going to be reworded to say other incubi units.
Yeah, either way. If he keeps it, he makes him quite powerful. If he doesn't keep it, it's definitely a nerf. So it's like, oh, okay. So it's kind of have to brace for that when it comes across. I got another Drukhari example, this interesting one, because you see this a little bit in some other factions. I think Gene Sylar Cult has a couple things that are examples like this. Master of Pain, add 1 to toughness characteristics of all Homunculus Coven units within 6 inches. Of any friendly Homunculus Coven models within this ability. So right off the bat, I'm like, okay, finally, they fixed the weird wonkiness that if you take vehicles in your coven, somehow the Homunculus made them +1 toughness. Didn't make any sense. You didn't see it that much because it was hard to, because they don't have a whole lot of vehicle options, but it was one of those weird things. But then you go, well, what is going to be core? Is it just going to be the Rax? Is it going to be the Grotesque? Are the Talos going to do that? In which case, do the Talos retain their toughness 7 with the Homunculus nearby? No idea. So those are some other interesting, you know, questions that come up. And again, we won't know till the Codex comes out. And I'll spare you my negativity in terms of when I think the Drukhari Codex is coming out. But just kind of weird interactions that way. So it's just kind of, how is this going to affect each of these armies as they come out, and having to wait until the codex comes out is a long wait, but I guess, don't know. Here, another one I can look at here is the Primus, you know, cult demagogue. Add 1 to hit rolls for attacks made by cult units within fight phase. They're within 6 inches of any friendly cult Primus. I could definitely see that being switched to core. Okay, not a big deal. And I'd be interested to see, which ones are the core ones. Would that be the Neophytes, but not the Brood Brothers, or because what's going on there? So I don't know. I'd be curious to see how that all works out. Right? What other examples can you think of, or is there any that kind of just went, eh?
Well, thinking back to 1,000 abilities that you see from Exalted Sorcerer, I mean, just about anything you can think of that could affect a model that would affect itself as well as others, you kind of have to consider if it's going to be changed.
Yeah. So it's one of those, okay. Why bring that up? I'll look up Exalted Sorcerer so we can take a look at how that affects things. You can reroll ones for friendly Thousand Suns units within 6 inches of this model. Okay, so which ones are the core ones? I would assume your basic Legionnaire is going to be core unit. Maybe a Skull Terminators, a Cult Terminator, excuse me. Probably not Zangors. So I don't know. You know, it's one of those kind of go back and forth. I don't know.
Well, I mean, as of right now, I don't think you really see Zangors with pistols, so I mean close combat, so they may consider an okay thing. But I mean, we won't know until the Codex comes out or they tell us.
Yeah, no kidding. Another one I was thinking of was I was listening to several people go off about their crazy builds for Dark Angels, and I was looking up Azrael real quick here, and he's got a basic chapter master rule, which sounds very similar to what we've already read. Reroll hit rolls for attacks made by models with a friendly Dark Angels units within 6 inches of this model. Easily switch that to core models. So in which case you go, okay, what if I'm playing Ravenwing versus Deathwing versus whatnot? So are there specific Ravenwing and Deathwing core units? I mean, that's something you could easily see that in the supplement that they're coming out with. So that could be interesting. Back to also Space Marines, I think was it Chapter Ancient?
Yeah.
So it's add one to leadership. And that's not what I'm looking at. Dots. Models that are destroyed within 6 inches of a friendly Chapter Ancients. I get that last surge on the 2+, they can shoot again. Is that it's only core units get the bounce back? Who knows? You know, so it just opens up so many more questions than answers at this point. It was just one of those things that kind of went, okay. I think overall it'll be good, better for the game. Like I said, the whole babysitting Primaris and repulsors in the back never made much sense. I especially hated it in Drukhari, the lone Archon in the back babysitting three Ravagers. Stupidest thing ever.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game. So it's like, okay. So, you know, okay, so we're reducing all that. So then it becomes, okay, and there's also fewer characters on the board. Maybe it's not that big of a deal. I guess I'm just looking at what other changes come to with core units. Specific stratagems will change. What's going on? So just left with a lot more questions. And as I keep going through more of the competitive lists, the net lists we talk about, well, I don't know if that will still work anymore. So a question I've got for you then is, last time we had a nice little discussion about, okay, if, you know, are we going to see an era like we did in 8th edition with index lists versus codex lists? With this now, is this kind of balance it out where you've got, bad news is I don't have all the upgraded weapons, but good news is I still have all my aura abilities affecting everybody.
I think it's going to be a little faction dependent. In this case, I think it's going to be, if you were already strong, probably not going to move that much. If you were on the lower tiers, you might get bumped up a little bit or not. And there may be a few cases where higher tier players who play the high tier armies, they could see a bit of a bump down, but you know, I think it's the same thing. It's more the player than the game. If you've got a good player playing a Space Marine faction and all of a sudden this doesn't work, the good players...
Yeah, I mean, I think skill will always rise up. I think you're right there. But I think one thing probably will not change is the best players will gravitate to the strongest lists. So if there's still if I hear you right, what you're saying is then if there's a broken combo, then the broken combo now will be just as powerful until the Codex comes out. And if you're already struggling, you pretty much can continue struggling at this point.
Potentially. But I mean, this is still a thing where we're playing a new edition with the old edition Codex. Now it's true, we might not really be playing a whole lot of differences between 8th and 9th Codexes. It may be that, you know, some new units here and there, some changes, small changes, are a very similar game to what we're experiencing today. But the truth is, we can't really say any of that for sure until it happens.
True. No, I still think it's still a very different game. I mean, the missions are the one that really drive the biggest difference, I think. So as we see new abilities come out, and I think that's going to be the bigger change from Codex to Codex, is that you can see certain codices that they talked about, like Psychic Awakenings, where designed with 9th edition in mind, but you can definitely tell which ones were probably closer to the end result. I suppose those were written early on. So because there's definitely some key changes that are like, well, that's a hugely beneficial ability right now. And other ones are like, nope, don't have that.
But I actually think this is going to be
Yeah, I think overall it will be. I think as it's being rolled out, I mean, I think the hardest part is being patient for each codex to be released, which I'm not very good at.
And of course, we're looking at what around the end of 8th was considered the strongest army, the could be potentially the most broken, and it's one of the two that are getting the first codexes for, that's not really going to help.
That's true. Well, I kind of go back and forth because it's, yeah, Necrons on the other hand were hurting, and so they seem to be getting almost a complete redo of their codex, both from a model standpoint as well as a rule standpoint. So it's kind of a little bit of both worlds where they're getting a little bit, you know, yeah, the best of the it was one of the worst is getting better. So
right, and as much as we've seen for Space Marines, we've seen even less for Necron.
True. Here's to see what exactly comes out. I thought it was interesting that Lich Guard and Tomb Blades were considered core units. To mention the narrative there wasn't exactly my first choices when I thought of that when I think of Necrons. So,
well, I think the point in this case is just to say it's not just going to be infantry, not just going to be the troops. I think it's important to remember, too, that when it gets down to it, look at how many different unit options there are for Space Marines, and then look at how many there are for Necrons. So at least as of 8th edition, there's two troop choices. That's it. In Space Marines, there, as of the latest 8th edition codec, there are 5 choices.
I'm trying to think off the head. I think there's probably more than that.
Well, there's scouts. The scouts, there's the tactical marine, there's the intercessors, there's the infiltrators and the incursors. Those are the 8th edition troop choices.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah. Because then you add in the assault intercessors and the heavy intercessors.
Yeah, so there's going to be 7 in the 9th edition codex.
Yeah, it's kind of quite a few options there.
Yeah. Let's look at your faction is Kari. You have 3 troop choices.
Yep, split among those subs, 1 each for each of the subgroups there. So that's a little hard to,
comes attacks after a while. Necron, in a way.
Yeah, let's just look through the Necrons here. All the new stuff, you know, the new destroyers, the new. Everything is elites and heavies. So pretty much everything they've come out with is an HQ, an elite, or a heavy.
Yeah, and unless they decide to move something into the troop, it's going to stay that way.
Yep. Scarabs are fast attack.
Yep. Scarabs are fast attack. I want to say Necrons have 3 or 4 fast attack options. You've got the Scarabs, the Wraiths, and the Tomb Blades. I can't think of anything else in the Codex that's fast attack.
Trying to remember if the original destroyers were fast attack.
Yes. I think they are fast attack. The regular destroyers, yeah. But Necrons have always been kind of an HQ, elite, and heavy army. Yep. That's why competitive Necron list that was really winning was basically Imhotech, as few troops as you could get away with, and then the flyer, the Doomsday Arcs, and Doomscythe. They only had troops because they needed to get the command points of a battalion. So, but almost every faction is like that. Space Marines are the exception to what we see in basically every codex, which is 2 to 3 troops. And I mean, before we had the Primaris, they weren't an exception. They were the same. They had 2 troop choices.
Yep.
So I actually think that what we might like, and I'm probably wrong, but I think a strong thing for GW to do would be to take certain things and move them into troop choices or provide new troop choices with some of these codexes. I mean, we could go down.
So interesting you brought that up. So
codexes and their 2 troop choices.
Let's jump to orcs, for example, because we saw that preview model when they did kind of the montage there. And you look at it, it seems kind of bland for a character model. So orcs basically have, I'm trying to remember, slug-a-boys and shoot-a-boys. I think those are their only troop choices.
Which is to say a close combat and a shooting option? Is that it? Because I've never
pretty much actually even the close the
orcs codex. So.
Nah. Hang on, pull them up from. But yeah, it's basically the difference is, you know, the shoot-a-boys have the longer range gun, you know, the rifle. I think it's like a 18-inch assault 2 gun, and then the slugger boys have like pistol and close combat weapon. That's really all the difference. Other than that, they are almost identical. So it's like, oh, okay. and then it's always been in that orc war. Every orc war boss right now is screaming at us, going, "Well, there's a big difference between this and this," and that's an age-old debate: which one is the best choice? And it changes from edition to edition, to meta to meta. But let me pull up. I'm trying to remember if Gretchen are troop choices or snotlings and stuff like that. We go Xenos, orcs, troops. Yep, troop choices. And Gretchen. Yeah, Gretchen are the other choice. So boys and Gretchen. Those are your only two choices.
Okay. I mean, we could go over all of them. Actually, I think Tyranids are one of the few options, factions that have more than two. I believe they have four. Because you've got the Warriors, Hormigaunts, Termagaunts, and Rippers.
And Gene Stealers.
That's right. They have the Gene Stealers and the troops there, don't they?
Yep.
Do they have two different types of Gene Stealers and the Tyranids? They have the Pierce Strain in there too, or is that just a Gene?
They list them separately in the online. So I guess they are a different. And I don't think Tau now has, because they came with all those different types of. Yeah, Tau have three.
Okay, so
Gene Stealer cults have three. Breacher teams, Kroot, and
our Kroot troops. Fire,
and then what? Kroot are troops.
Okay.
Hey, I had no idea they actually came out with Farsight Enclave shoulder pads. I had no idea. I thought they were just decals. That's pretty cool.
No, those came out back in 6th edition.
Yeah, I had no idea. I thought they were just decals. I didn't realize they were actually plastic molded ones. All right. Slight tangent there. So, Gene Stealer cults have three choices. Let's see what those are.
Gene Stealer cult would be Neophytes, Acolytes, and Brood Brothers.
Okay. Death Guard have five. That's interesting.
Five troops. Okay. They've got Plague Marines. They've got Cultists.
Yep.
The Poxwalkers. Yep. Yep. The thing is what's being counted in there are the demons, which would Nurglings and the Plaguebearers. But the thing is, if you're using those, you lose the Death Guard keyword for your purposes. That's why Thousand Sons technically have three, but one of those is the demon. And it's three because all the horrors are grouped into one data sheet. Otherwise, it would be five. Yeah.
Okay. This one, Astra Militarum, has eight.
Astra Militarum is just a...
Well, I think they're trying to appease to the legacy of what they came out with previous models, and it's kind of catching them from behind. You got Steel Legion as a separate choice, Cadians, Scions, Snipers.
Well, Scions are almost an example. Catagen. Scions are almost an example of a codex. I mean, back in 7th edition, we saw a bit of a split off Scions and Guard themselves. I know this because I took Wooden Spoon money from a tournament and bought Scion Codex just because I wanted to look through it. but yeah, that's kind of it's a mini army inside of a regular codex. And I think Guard will always be kind of an exception because it's supposed to, you know, the regular humans. So you expect more of them, Space Marines, things like that.
Right. But definitely, yeah, if you're an Imperium player, most of those factions have lots of troop choices. I mean, it's when you get to the Xenos ones where it gets really restrictive fast.
Yeah, it almost seems like...
Oh, take it back.
What?
As Adeptus Sororitas, they have one choice. Sorry.
That is a small arm. Just on the whole, they're small.
So, I don't know. Yep. So, yeah. So, it'll be interesting to see how this all fleshes out in terms of what's... I mean, even to talk about small armies, I mean, Harlequins, they got six units.
Okay. There is no army, with the exception of trying to play pure Scions, there is no army that is smaller than the Harlequins. They have two HQ choices, one troop choice, one dedicated transport, one fast attack, two elite.
One heavy support,
and yeah, one fast. I might have already said that. They are the smallest codex.
I remember at one point they didn't have an HQ choice. That was pretty funny.
No, they were the only army that didn't have to have one.
It's goofy.
Well, I mean, that's what happens when you take something that was an add-on to two different codexes and like decide to make them their own faction on a whole.
Yeah. Nonetheless, they've proven to be quite competitive in 9th edition. So, all right. So tell us what you think, what your thoughts are on what should be a core unit, what shouldn't be a core unit, or just about this rule change in general. You can find us on our Facebook page. In the meantime, we'll take a quick break and get into the tournament action, what limited we have, for this week. Be back right after the break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back after the break. As we promised, some tournament action. We go overseas to Oslo, Norway, to the Oslo 40K Varapent Dawn of War event. And must be nice because they actually got a good turnout. Normally, only about 18 players, but some interesting players at the top of the list. So kind of take a look at what's going on in competitive play. Ray, who's our top five for this event?
All right. In fifth place, we had Espen Rolleton playing Ultramarines. Fourth,
Rolleton, I think it is. But
well, there's an E between each and it's kind of...
Yeah. Sorry, Espen. It's got a network named after him. That's pretty cool.
There's Alexander Buvik in fourth with Death Guard. Third was Eric Christofferson playing Imperial Knights. Second, it's either Joe or I think in some places up there that the J is like an H, so Yo or Ho. Holmson. If somebody knows the answer to that, feel free to message us. He was playing Astromilitarum for second. And in first, playing Harlequin, Rasmus Valand Fredriksson.
So just looking at... okay, so looking at the lists here, we actually have some interesting lists. We talked a little bit about Harlequins being the smallest codex, but also big on win so far in 9th edition. Take a look at the winning list here. It is a battalion of Frozen Stars. So these guys, they get plus one attack, and they have the nifty stratagem for plus one to wound. HQ slot, they got Shadow Seer. He's a player of Twilight, is his warlord trait. He's got Shards of Light and Shield, which is a aimable smite. Shield from Harm, which is the minus one to wound. He also got the Veil of Illusion, which is add 6 inches to opponent's attacks when it comes to shooting. Also got Twilight Pathways, which allows them to move twice. Slim into Warp Time from Chaos. And also has a Shadow Stone, so his R abilities extend out to 9 inches instead of the usual 6. He also has the Incarn, and of course, the Troop Master, which he kept pretty basic with a Fusion Pistol and a Harlequin Kiss. In the Troop slot, he's got 3 units of troops, all of them with Fusion Pistols and Harlequin Blade, 3 units of 6. In the Elite slot, he's got 3 Death Jesters. First one has Kegarok's Lament in Harvester of Torment, Mythical Role. The second Death Jester has Humbling Cruelty, and the third one has the Jest Inescapable. In the fast attack slot, he's got 3 units of 5 Skyweavers with Haywire Cannons and Zephyr Glaives. In dedicated troop slots, he's got 3 Starweavers to give his troops a ride around with their fusion pistols. So there you go. It is a whole lot of drive-by shooting. If you have vehicles, you're in a heck of a lot of hurt with all that Haywire Cannons. And a couple characters to bulk everybody up. And, of course, the Incarn to bounce back and forth and take out units in the back row. So pretty interesting list. A lot of the cores that we've seen in other Harlequin lists. But then again, when you have 6 units in your codex, it's hard to be original. Mr. Holmeson comes in with his Astromilitarum list. We've not seen Astromilitarum in the top 5, so I thought this would be of note here to take a look at what's going on here. Starts off with a battalion, and they are, he has a custom regimental doctrine of gunnery experts and jury-rigged repairs. He also has given out a tank ace to one of his tank commanders. He's got 3 tank commanders in the HQ slots. First one, all of them are Lehman Russ commanders. First one has a Laz Cannon, Plasma Cannon. He's got Kugarov's Aquila, and that becomes his warlord. Second one is got a heavy flamers with plasma cannons. I'm trying to remember what stat damage does. I'm not familiar with that one. And a turret, and then a Punisher Gatling cannon on that one. So that'd be the weed out the chaff. And then the third one has a demolisher siege cannon. So a little bit of all 3 flavors there. Kind of a Neapolitan of tank commanders on top. He's got 1, 2, 3, 4 infantry squads of 10. Pretty bare bones. A unit of 4 Bulgrin, all with slab shields. And then he has a platoon commander with bolt pistol and chainsword. Another frag commander, a platoon commander, excuse me. Laz pistol and chainsword, pretty much bare bones. He's got a unit of 2 hellhounds, 2 scout sentinels. And then in the heavy support slot, he's got a basilisk, a manticore. And then in the dedicated transports, 3 chimeras, all with heavy flamers. Interesting. So, two of them with heavy flamers, one with a heavy bolter. So a lot of flamers, so he's really counting on getting up into your face and just taking advantage of auto hits and just pouring on volume of fire. Bulgrin's probably there to just hold down the fort, being a kind of immovable object. and you've got all this other stuff crushing in your face, and you still have to deal with all these Lehman Russes. So that is kind of a rude list, kind of hard to deal with. Yeah, with all those vehicles, it has a decent amount of movement. So I'm curious if Harlequin player and the Astra Militarum player played each other. I'll take a look at that in a second. And then our third place player was Eric Christofsen, and just when you thought knights can't win, he said, hold my beer. And they have nice beer in Norway, so it's a big deal. So he starts off with a super heavy detachment featuring House Terran. And for household tradition, he's got a Gallant Warriors. It's also given the Exalted Court with the extra Warlord trait, and then, of course, extra heirlooms, so more relics. His first knight is a Cerastus Knight Archeon. I can never pronounce that right. One of the four jewel knights with flame cannon, and they also gave him the helm of the Nameless Warrior, and it's also got a Reaper Chain Fist in, to add to the fun. Then the second is a Cerastus Knight Atropos. I always mispronounce those. And it's got the laser cutter, Graviton Singularity Cannon, and the usual. And they also gave them the Ion Bulwark as the Warlord trait. And they also add in a Knight Gallant, keep it nice and simple, and gave them the Armor of the Sainted Ion. And that's got the Reaper Chain Sword as well as a Thunderstrike Gauntlet to add to it. Then he adds a Spearhead of Astra Militarum just to mix it up a little bit. Tank Ace. And stratagem, but interesting enough, he took a Primaris Psyker as his lone HQ choice, two units of 10 infantry squads, and then a Manticore with a Stygies, and then a Stygies Thunder Siege tank. He probably gave them the tank ace, and that has a Demolisher Cannon. So I guess he's got a few token infantry models to hold down some objectives, but mostly I bet you those Forge World Knights are doing the work. I had to say, I'd be curious how that's going to change when Forge World stuff comes out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things end up changing.
It's interesting that the Harlequin player, Rasmus, paced Eric in round two. And in that game, as we mentioned, no surprise there, with all that haywire and all that extra fusion guns, Rasmus with his Harlequins won 68-35. He had Bjorn Holsom, his one loss, was to the Knight player of all. Oh, no, I'm sorry. To the, I read that wrong. 2-3. He lost to the Ultramarines player who came in fifth. Even across the seas, Space Marines are still a threat to be dealt with. But overall, it's a pretty interesting event because sixth place Necrons, seventh place Gene Stealer Cult, eighth place Necrons, ninth place Drukhari, tenth place Imperial Knights again. So, Blood Angels languishing in 12th place. Talk about mid table obscurity. And as mentioned, the Wooden Student goes to the very Norwegian name of Charles Webb. Going a perfect 0-5 on the weekend with Chaos Space Marines. And he's rocking, let's see what he's got here. Alpha Legion Battalion featuring a Demon Prince, Exalted Champion, and a Sorcerer. A large blob of 30 cultists. And then a unit of Chaos Space Marines. Two units of Chaos Space Marines, I apologize. And he has a, wow, I haven't seen this since 5th edition, a Chosen Squad featuring 5 plasma guns and about 4 additional chosen, kind of the soak up wounds, and a Hellbrute featuring a Hell missile launcher and Reaper autocannon. And then the second detachment is a Red Corsairs featuring Huron and a Saucer. Marcus Slaanesh Chaos Space Marine Squad. He's got three of those, and 2 Rhinos to get them around. Interesting. Okay. Like I said, I haven't seen Chosen Wing in quite some time. So there you go, Charles. We support you. Ray, any other thoughts from Oslo?
Something I'm curious on is a Necron list that was in 6th place.
Sure, let's take a look at that. Gentleman's name is Kim Lin. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Kim. And he actually went 3-2 on the weekend.
Yeah, in fact, both of his losses came to the person who came in 2nd and 3rd, respectively, actually.
So he had some tough competition. Yeah. So you're rocking a battalion of Mephrite, this dynasty.
Okay.
And he has a Cryptek Luminar Zaris, as well as a Scorpec Lord. So that's the new one from the Indominus box. Troop slots, he's got a unit of 10 Immortals, and then 2 units of 10 Warriors. Excuse me, 2 units of 20 Warriors. Elite slot, he's got a unit of 10 Deathmarks, and then a unit of 10 Triarch Praetorians, along with a Triarch Stalker. In the fast attack slot, he's got a Scarab Swarm of 5, the second Scarab Swarm of 3, and a unit of 6 destroyers. So he's got a fair amount of mobility with the, between destroyers and the Praetorians. Those are two big blocks that move 12. And he's got the 2 large unit of warriors to really lock down, you know, objectives. I'm guessing Illuminar Zaris would then keep buffing them as well, giving them all the +1. He's kind of the Necron answer to Fabius Bile. And the Scorptech Lord is probably kind of the, what's the word I'm looking for? The deterrent to, you know, the, you set them up and like challenge people to assault or come in close. So go ahead and assault the warriors. You're going to get beat up by this thing. Mm-hmm. So. And then the Scarabs, I don't know, with only units of 3s and 4s, or they're pretty small units, I guess they could go downfield and challenge objectives downfield, but I don't know. I looked at Scarabs in a long time. They used to have like quite a few wounds, but I remember them being like toughness -1 or something. Like
that. They haven't really changed.
10-inch move, so that's still pretty good. Their toughness 3. That's not bad. 4 wounds. 6 up save. Okay, that's a change, but I remember them being worse than that. Okay. So yeah, they can zip along, grab stuff. That's not too bad. And they're easy to hide.
They're actually easier to hide than Nurglings.
Yeah, that's true. The Nurglings like to pile up on each other, make little human pyramids. So there we go. That is your event. All right. So that's our tournament coverage. Most of the other tournaments over the weekend are trying to stay close as they can to the COVID guidelines of the local area. So a lot of invitationals, a lot of small 8- and 10-man events. I think the largest other event we saw was 16. Next weekend, we should have a lot more to talk about with Iron Halo going off. So be curious to see another major tournament in the Midwest taking place. So I'll have to give you all the rundown of that particular event. So we're going to take a quick break, go over your ITC top 10, as well as any closing thoughts for the show. Be back after this. Does your game day fare leave your fingers orange or your game table pizza stained? There is a better option. You need the Necronom Nom Nom. Yes, that's right. The cosmic horror and great cuisine become allies of convenience with this darkly humorous, gorgeously illustrated, and simple-to-use guide to insanely good food. 50 recipes arm you with breakfast, lunch, and dinner from drinks to dessert. Use unique grimoire of forbidden recipes. Don't tell the Inquisition, but you can tell your friends to find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Brought to you by the madmen of Red Duke Games, take the pizza shop off speed dial and treat your players to something new and delicious from the Necronom Nom Nom. Welcome back. As a quick mention, our ITC top 10 quickly updated. Mostly top 10 at this point have their full 6 events. There's only about 3 or 4 players now languishing with 1 event to go. 10th place, one of those set mentioned, has only 5 events under his belt. Colin McDade with 891 points. 9th place, Canada's Devin Swan with 911 points. 8th place, James Pinkington. 7th place, Mike Porter from England, who still is just trailing Dan Sammons in 6th place by 0.2 of a point. James Kelly occupies the 5th place with a mere 5-point lead over Dan Sammons. Mark the Gator Hurdle with 946 points occupies 4th place. And he's only 0.3 of a point behind 3rd place Ryan Snyder. Former number 1 Vic Vijay hanging in there at 1,064 points. But your leader, second week in a row, is Ken Knox with 1,189.98 points through 6 events. So, yeah, be safe out there. I think it's going to be a while, but there's still plenty of time to get your points in later in the year. But make sure you're tending, minding the safety of yourself as well as others while attending events. Ray, we got some new products coming out this week.
Yeah, so the Sunday preview for what goes on pre-order next Saturday just popped up. We've got the new Crusade book. It's centered around Pariah Nexus, which includes 24 missions for 4 different game sizes, along with what they call agendas, battle traits, relics, and battle scars. And other things you'll need for playing Crusade in that area. But something for us match play players. We've got the new chapter-approved mission pack. This one's called Tactical Deployment. It's centered around terrain and focuses on it. It has 18 new missions for all sizes of the game. Includes extensive rules for playing these tactical deployment games, focusing on tactics. And alongside that, we're getting the repack terrain and terrain data sheet cards. They're meant for...
Really?
Yeah. This set of cards includes narrative and match play terrain rules for a range of manufactorum. So let's see what we got. We've got something coming on called Battle Zone Manufactorum Verticus. So it's got some of those battle mat tiles, a bunch of pipes, and some familiar looking terrain and some new looking terrain. Nothing too big, at least by the looks of it. A lot of it looks like it's single story and maybe a space to stand on top of. Two double-sided game boards, making it what they say is perfect for combat patrol and incursion-sized games. There's also smaller boxes. A lot of the terrain looks to have new names, too. They've got what they call
sub-cloister
and storage vein, and the Sanctum Administratus, which is kind of a taller building. Three floors total.
Yeah, it's interesting. That actually makes me feel better, because some of the stuff was missing from their website, and I was like, oh man, those are pretty cool. So the Sanctum Administratus looks like it's the AdMech themed garage door sets that came out after Kill Team. So that's what that is. And so that's pretty cool. And then the other ones though are pretty neat, because you also got the armored containers are back. Mm-hmm. And they come with a whole slew of stuff. So containers as well as a whole bunch of barrels and ammo boxes and stuff like that. So kind of cool.
Yeah.
The other set, though, I wouldn't snooze on that, because that Veritas box, those little walls and stuff do make a big impact in the game, as I've been learning, I've been playing. Because each one of those walls, if you're within 3 inches, does give you cover, and also is a -1 to hit. So that's kind of cool. Leave the pipes give you the cover in close combat. So if you're charged with that, you get a +1 save.
Yeah. Well, it looks like it's a good start for anybody who is just starting to build up terrain for their own table at home.
Oh, yeah. No, it looks good. I am very curious about these rules, if there's any further guidelines, because it's been, I don't know, I wanted something a little more, what's the word I'm looking for? Definitive in terms of what is the terrain. I mean, I know they've given us a few pictures to tell us, okay, this is what we expect a terrain to look like and how it's set up for gameplay, which is more than we've gotten in the past, but it's not, I was expecting something more. So hopefully this helps you with that. The datasheet cards are kind of nice, because that's one of those things where I've been hearing like other events been using like tokens or random pieces of paper, so players know what keywords are for their terrain pieces. This might be a nice way to do that.
Actually, yeah, I think it's a great
lot of neat stuff. Could be
having little cards. It's a great strategy.
Yeah. So I'm pretty excited about this. And so this is all up for pre-order this Saturday.
Yep.
Okay. Very cool.
And this,
I don't know, we're more of a competitive comp.
This is the last. I just wanted to say real quick, this is the last Saturday of September. So we're entering the window of when we could start seeing stuff come out for Space Marines and Necrocodexes, new models and units, all that stuff. So have your wallets prepared if you play either of those factions.
Good call. Very good call. Yeah, those things are ready to come out. All right. Any other breaking updates, we will let you know across our Facebook page. And just a quick reminder, we are still not only on iTunes, we're still on Spotify, but we've recently, the last few episodes, have also been on YouTube. So let your friends know. We can find the Exterminatus podcast on 3 different formats, whatever is best for you. So in the meantime, we've got quite a bit to cover this next couple of weeks with more updates as they come. So my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.